This week on Pop of Culture, the Andersontown Powwow.
Try to get rid of your stereotypes. And it's a hard thing to do.
Around 55 counties that people come from, you know, we usually track about 17 states that people, you know, are driving from.
I was attracted to the music of the Native American culture.
We get ready to celebrate with the artists and curators making the powwow happen.
And we get a sneak peek at a new children's book coming up.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Join us at IndianaPublicRadio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Jen Blackmer. Michelle, it's our 30th episode.
I can't believe it. 30. That is a lot of episodes.
That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
But you know what?
What?
30's the new 20.
I love that.
All right.
I love that. Here's to 30 more, Jen.
We have a lot to get to today. Coming up, we're going to give you an in-depth preview of the Andersontown Powwow.
But first, we have two guests with us. We are here to talk about the Mismatch Kids and how that book came about. And joining me is Shannon McCarthy. She is the artist responsible for the book, and Ashley Breedlove from Heart of Indiana United Way. And we should mention this is also a project that the Muncie Arts and Culture Council had something to do with, and their Ply Space program. We're going to get it all figured out and let you know why this is so awesome. We're going to start with Shannon McCarthy. Shannon, tell us about how you came to Muncie, why you got involved in the Ply Space program, what it is, and what your project entailed.
Sure. So actually, my friend Shantanu at Ball State, he's another graphic design professor like myself, and he reached out about an opportunity with Ply Space and how they're looking for a way to raise literacy within the community for children. And he knew that my previous children's book on big emotions, Some Days Feel Stormy, came out 2022, and he thought this would be a perfect connection. So he actually synced me up with Muncie Arts and Ply. And we just got together, and over several months, we talked and we initiated ideas. And I threw out, hey, I have another book that is in my brain. I want to get it out. And how can we do that? And so we figured out how we could make those connections and those collaborations.
Oh, that's awesome. We should point out that Ply Space is an immersive artist-in-residence program based in downtown Muncie, and it's part of Muncie Arts. And the whole idea is that we bring these amazing artists to town. Not only are they able to kind of like flex their creative muscles, but then they get involved in several projects that impact the community as well. That's very important to the Ply Space program. So Shannon, you decided to do your project where? Where was your base?
So I worked with the Ross Community Center.
Yes.
And I visited Muncie for about a week long, and I went to the community center after for their after school program for about two to four times, you know, doing different activities. And those activities range. So we talked about storytelling and character building. We talked about, you know, design as well, and creating our own monsters, but also really about big emotions and how to work with those emotions in different ways. So going through nature walks, seeing how we're all similar or different and how that's a cool thing by working with like little fuzzy balls and cups. And, you know, working with a good range of kindergarten through basically fifth graders to get that understanding of how to correlate that within my book as well to reach those audiences.
And tell me, what did you learn? What did you get from spending the time with the kiddos at Ross Community Center?
Well, I'm a cat mom, so I have two cats, Sans and Seraph. It is a type joke. I hope you laugh and get it.
Love it.
But it was really great to just absorb the atmosphere, the crazy sort of energy, and just to see how the students or the kids talk to each other, and also how they thought about concepts. I also did read Some Days Feel Stormy to them, and seeing what they were intrigued, like which parts they're really interested in, and asking them questions to further understand the story through their eyes. and just getting that, you know, valuable knowledge and insight to bring forth with this, and also monster inspiration. So again, just seeing how they were working with colors and shapes and working from inspiration supplied to them, and how they were combining those figures and making their own little creations.
Why the focus on emotions and what kids are dealing with? Why is that important to you, Shannon?
Well, I think it's, you know, of the time, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, born in the later half of the 80s, we were brought up differently. And so, especially with COVID and being isolated and different things, a lot of emotions arose and a lot of knowledge. And, you know, finally the pronounced understandings of these types of things and how they can affect children and adults really came to light. And I wanted to focus things that I've experienced in my own life, mm-hmm. and how I could then relate that more towards children so they can understand that other people have felt this way, other people still do feel this way. So even though my books are geared towards children, it's really coming from an adult point of view as her child experiences. And I just thought it was of the time to really pronounce these big emotions, since they're becoming more mainstream, understandable, and acceptable.
Oh, I love that. What was it about the Ply Space program that appealed to you?
Really, it was the connection that they wanted to work with literacy.
Yeah.
And I just knew this would be a perfect fit to figure out, like, how can I bring storytelling to their community and help children through finding that connection on big emotions and experiences shared.
Oh, I love that. Speaking of connections, let's bring Ashley Breedlove into the conversation from Heart of Indiana United Way. How did the United Way get involved in this project, Ashley?
Yeah, absolutely. So Heart of Indiana United Way is honored to lead the grade level reading work through Cradle to Career Muncie. Mm-hmm. And a big piece of that, my role in that, is to help bring partners together, yeah. help strategize and convene everybody so that way we are all strengthening our outcomes through collective action. And so with that, you know, of course we support the systematic side of things, whether it is through working with partners at Ball State or yeah. Ivy Tech or the K-12 system of Muncie Community Schools, but also helping our out-of-school time partners,
yes.
and even anybody that's serving children out of school, how to embrace literacy, how to promote literacy, how to make literacy an option during their everyday moments. A lot of times when we think of literacy, we think of that just simply meaning, can your child decode the words that are on the page?
Yes.
But really, literacy is our ability to communicate. It's our ability to obtain new information. It's our ability to learn more. And so this really fit into that category.
Oh, yeah.
This really helped kind of, you know, merge some of those things and help us understand that literacy and a joy of literacy or understanding literacy, promoting that, is more than just, you know, decodable text or being able to read a novel, whatever that might look like.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have been a longtime partner of Ross Community Center, also of Muncie Arts. And so when this opportunity was presented to us, it made perfect sense.
Yeah.
It was just a really great opportunity for us to promote literacy in everyday moments while also engaging our kids and helping them learn some of those really important skills in a way that's fun and just engaging all around. So.
Yeah. That. What do you love most about this book, The Mismatch Kids?
Absolutely. So personally, I am a former educator, and yeah. so I also have a master's in curriculum and then also a master's in public administration for adult learners. And so with that, my focus a lot of times is on non-traditional learners or neurodivergent learners.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I've learned with that is that those children, those people, are very, very capable of learning, but it needs to look different than yeah. what that traditional learning setting looks like. And so with this allowed our kids to apply some of their skills that they learn in literacy, whether it's plot development or character traits or just that emotional piece of things.
Yeah.
And it allowed them to understand that a little bit different and then contribute to a book where they got to see all of those things come full circle. As far as I know, the children haven't seen the book yet. So I'm very excited for this.
Yes.
And also for them to understand that their feelings are validated, yes. that they matter. And regardless of what kind of character traits you have or what kind of things you're going through, that matters and it's important and there's a place for you.
Yeah. And then to see that experience unfold page by page mm-hmm. in a book. What a wonderful, I mean, I can't imagine the pride that's going to come with that from the kiddos from Ross Community Center being like, oh yeah, I had a part in that. That book, mm-hmm, I helped with that, right? So Shannon, how many of the kiddos said, oh, I'm gonna be a writer now, or I'm gonna do some design, some graphic design, I'm gonna illustrate books. I mean, did you see a lot of enthusiasm around that?
I did see much more them being much more comfortable with that, yeah. understanding that it is possible for them to do that and have careers within the art design industry, but also be able to, you know, have their stories told and listened to.
Yes.
And that was just an amazing feeling to be able to see that throughout, for them to be like, oh, yes, I can do this. I want to do this.
Absolutely. And now, you know, when the book comes out, not only will you be able to read the book, but if you go to Ross Community Center, you'll be able to walk the brand new story trail, where as you walk the trail, the book unfolds for you as part of kind of an installation at Ross Community Center. And I know there's going to be a celebration around that on September 14th. Ashley, what can you tell me about the celebration?
Yeah, absolutely. On September 14th at the Ross Community Center, from 2 to 4, we will have the unveiling of our new story walk. So those story walks are really neat because, as you mentioned, you can walk from sign to sign and you could read the stories of the pages of the book, but also there's prompts on there that help you to engage in the story and also to kind of be a part of that. And so on September 14th, and this is free and open to the community, we would love to have lots of people there. Shannon will be with us and she will be reading and also signing stories so families can receive a free copy of the book. But we've also pulled in all kinds of community partners to have some different activities and booths that represent the different monsters in the book. So we have some volunteers from Ball State that'll be there. We've got some volunteers from Muncie Public Library, the Children's Museum, Ivy Tech, of course, Heart of Indiana United Way, and lots of other people there. So that way we can help not only read a story together,
yeah.
but also celebrate the victories that our children helped to contribute to this, that they can see how their work and how their voices were represented. But also we can just really have some fun around yes. a story and strengthen our understanding, the social emotional understandings that are there, but also the, you know, the how to create a story and how all of those things pull into that.
Yes.
As Shannon mentioned, one thing that our children really wrapped around was the understanding that as an artist, whether it's an illustrator or a graphic designer, that you are contributing greatly to the understanding yes. of that story. And so our children will be able to really experience that in a different way, where really just incite some hope and some excitement of what maybe their future might look like and how maybe they might contribute to the literacy world. And so, on September 14th, we would love to have anybody from the community come join us. It is, again, from 2 to 4 at the Ross Community Center. It'll be a really fun day, and we're really looking forward to that.
I love that. Shannon, how does it make you feel to see all of this awesomeness happen because of your PlySpace residency here in Muncie?
Truly unbelievable. Yeah. I'm sort of overwhelmed with excitement about this whole opportunity, and in just seeing it just sort of explode within in a community and having those kids be able to experience what it can be, right? So if they yeah. really put their heart and mind into it and explore those emotions and those skill sets, what it could be in the end.
That's fantastic. Shannon, before we go, can you give us just a quick summary, kind of the inside book flap summary of what the Mismatch Kids is about?
Yes. So I'm going to read from the back of my book.
Ooh.
It says, "Has have you ever felt like you don't fit in? The Mismatch Kids sure have. Follow them along on their journey of loving all kinds of different things, and then embracing their uniqueness is the coolest thing of all."
I love it. I love that. Thank you so much, Shannon, for joining us. Thank you so much, Ashley, for being in studio with us. We look forward to seeing you both on the Story Trail September 14th. going to spend some time now on the Andersontown Powwow. The annual cultural celebration is this Saturday and Sunday, September 7th and 8th.
And I am here today with Mike Pace, who is an educator and performer, storyteller, and he's going to be joining us here for the Andersontown Powwow coming up. Hello, Mike.
How you doing today?
We're doing great. Yeah, thank you.
In my language, we would say, Wooly Kishku. How are you doing? It is a good day.
Oh, fantastic. Well, it is a good day. It's an excellent day and a better day because I'm here talking with you.
Sure.
So, Mike, if you could just introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, my name is Michael Pace. My tribal name, of course, is Hingulin Okawiti Toking, which means the big man who sleeps in the trees. My family are the Elkers, the Andersons, and being a direct descendant of Chief Anderson, we've been helping in Anderson University and Conner Prairie over in Fishers for actually over 30 years now as advisors on the culture, the language, the history of the many tribes that lived here in Indiana. What we try to do is educate people strictly on Native American history. As part of Conner Prairie's project, that was to create a path for people to learn a little bit more about the many cultures that were present here in Indiana before and after it became a state. And of course, today, the Lenape or Delaware tribe, we live in the state of Oklahoma. Now, there are actually four different groups of Delaware or Lenape, and both names are interchangeable.
Okay, that was actually a question. So I have heard both tribal names referred to, and they refer to the same tribe, correct?
Sure, absolutely. When the Europeans arrived in this continent, we were actually occupying an area on the East Coast. The Delaware name actually came from Lord De La Warr, who was the governor of Maryland and Virginia, assigned by the English.
Right, and yes.
They named the river after him. And so the Lenape started to be referred to as Delaware's Indians, like he owned us or something. But anyway, that's where that name, and it stuck. And so we're also known as the Delaware. But the Delaware Lenape tribe is only in Indiana for about 25 years. After 1795 and the Treaty of Greenville, which pushed all the tribes out of what is now the state of Ohio, we were over in this area. But like I said, only about 25 years, the Delaware had a number of villages right here in this area, stretching actually from Muncie over past Carmel. And some of those villages' sites actually later on became cities. So Anderson, Muncie, and Strawtown were actually village sites of the Delaware. They created those cities known by other names in earlier times.
Right. Okay. So you are going to be joining us here for the Andersontown Powwow. Can you explain, first of all, what is a powwow? Can you define the concept for our listeners?
Sure. You know, actually, powwows are a fairly new concept because tribe had their own traditional gatherings. But they were strictly just for that particular group or tribe. But in the early 1900s, some tribes began to put on exhibitions, and they began to invite other tribes to share in the language, the culture, the history of each tribe. And it became a gathering place. And also the songs that were created for that were actually for sharing the culture. And so you have two types of drum songs that you will hear at a powwow. You have a northern style, and you have a southern style drum.
And this is originally, you said, among Native audiences, so between various tribes in the area, they would come together.
Yeah, actually, it was for everybody. Anybody mm-hmm. was welcome to come. And yes, at first, I'm sure some of the people who were not tribal people were kind of hesitant to show up at events like that, considering the early history. Actually, in the United States, a lot of people don't realize that up until 1890, it was legal to kill Indians.
Oh, boy.
And Indians did not become citizens of the United States until 1924.
Right.
And so they were considered wards of the government. They had no recourse on anything. They were pretty much just treated as barbarians, basically. But we know that to be far from the truth. And it is kind of funny. I do remember the chief of the Eastern Shawnee here in Oklahoma, Buck Captain. He used to say that when he was very young, nobody wanted to be Indian, because it carried such a heavy weight and the prejudice and the bias against tribes was still pretty great.
Right.
And he said, now everybody wants to be Indian now. So things have changed.
That's excellent. So what are you going to be presenting specifically?
We will be doing some dances. We have a lot of exhibitions that will be going on. Dwight Gallion, who also is the fur trader over at Connor Prairie, he and I have been doing storytelling from different points of view, of course, and their most historical views of our language, culture, and history. I do nulele numaliquiosquigaskel nixia kahiti. I do speak my own language. And so I try to pass on a little bit of that and how we use it and how it's different from all the other tribes.
I am excited that tradition is continuing even through today. And it seems to me that that is one of the many reasons, which is actually a question I want to ask you. Sure. You know, why mm-hmm. Why is it important for us to continue to do these kinds of celebrations like the powwow today?
Well, I think today a lot of people, because the world is such a busy place, we kind of lose touch with the many heritages we have and the myriad of ideas that come from all of those different cultures. And to be able to share those and learn from them is what makes life worth living for most people.
It's beautiful. Mike, can you share with us, are there any etiquette guidelines or things for those of us who are really excited to attend the powwow? Anything you can share with us about maybe what to expect or how to engage?
Absolutely. You know, the whole idea when you're dealing with another culture is try to get rid of your stereotypes. And it's a hard thing to do. And watch what you say and how you say it. But basically, at a powwow, there's not many things you really have to worry about. People are welcoming. They will allow you to say and do things that normally you wouldn't do. But they kind of allied over those sort of things for the celebration. One thing people do need to remember, that for tribes, they treat the arena as a very special place.
Uh-huh.
And you try to treat that as a sacred place. So you try not to do silly things or disrespectful things within that circle. Other than that, you can talk to people about their culture, their history, their clothing, their dress. And there's not much that you can't cover from doing that. We certainly want to have people come out and celebrate with us. And people have to remember, it's not an exhibition. It is a celebration of life and culture and history.
That's incredible. Mike, thank you so much for your time today. We're super excited about it. And I hope you have an amazing day, and we'll see you soon.
Yes, I'm, although it's still a little bit early, I think I'm ready for my second nap at my age. Okay.
Mike Pace is a Native American cultural interpreter who educated visitors at Conner Prairie for nearly 30 years. This is Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. Okay, we are here with Debbie Webb. Her day job is an underwriting guru right here at Indiana Public Radio. But
that's
there's
true.
Something else that is near and dear to Debbie's heart, and she's here to talk about it today. And that, of course, if you know Debbie, is the Andersontown Powwow. Thanks so much for coming in and talking about this event with us.
I'm excited to be here. I have chills because, you know, it's like talking about my kids or my dogs. Powwow's third in line.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. So let's get like some of those main details out of the way, Debbie. So when is it and where is it? Let's start there.
Okay. So the Andersontown Powwow is September 7th and 8th. Mm-hmm. So that's always the first weekend after Labor Day. And it's at Beulah Park in Alexandria.
Yeah. And so let's go back to when you started with the Andersontown Powwow. And why? Why is this so important to you?
You know, it goes back to 2002, and I was taking my son to ice skating in downtown Anderson, what's now the Dickman Town Center. Mm-hmm. Wayne Siebold had set up an ice skating rink. He eventually became the mayor of Marion, an Olympic skater. And there was a gentleman that had moved from Oklahoma, and he'd heard about a festival that was held to honor the city's Native American heritage. And he was disappointed that it had gone away. And it's like he had a vision to create a powwow to celebrate that history and that heritage. And I became hooked because it involved an opportunity to serve youth and celebrate the community. And so that's something that I've been engaged in all my adult life. So it was a no-brainer.
Yeah. What is it about the event itself, Debbie, that keeps you coming back year after year? You must be involved.
So we created an educational outreach program the very first year, and so that has been a high point. We do 2 days of programs for fourth graders. That's when they study Indiana history.
Yes.
And so many of the dancers and the historical interpreters that participate in the powwow also are involved in the educational outreach program that we do for fourth graders. We also created an artist-in-residence program that some of the fine artists that have been recognized, you know, worldwide for their talents, come back and spend the day in art classrooms. And then it's just the joy that you see that people enjoy coming to the powwow. I mean, they make it an annual event, and it's important to them. And so it's just very gratifying.
Absolutely. Debbie, and I know Debbie's getting emotional because this event means so very much to her, and I can completely understand why. It truly is a community event, but also so important that it's educational.
It's educational.
About our Native American heritage and history in this area.
Exactly. And it's about respecting other cultures and valuing them. And so, you know, it's just so inclusive, and it's important to see how meaningful it is to so many people. I mean, over 3,000 people travel to the Andersontown Powwow every year because it's meaningful to them.
Yeah.
And so you see their enjoyment and their joy, and it's like, that's the greatest payback.
Absolutely. It must be like a big family reunion for you. I was just
Do you know that's what a powwow like is?
Yeah.
It is a reunion. You know, it's been a year since I've seen them, but it was just like yesterday because those friendships are, I mean, they're over 20 years old now.
Wow. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And there is so much going on hot off the presses. Debbie just brought me the brochure. And when I tell you it is packed, with things to do and see and taste and experience. I'm not kidding. It is packed. I know we can't go through every bit of the schedule, Debbie, but please share with us some of the highlights that people can look forward to.
So some of the highlights. I'm looking at Patrick Willie. He's a hoop dancer. Yes. He's Navajo. He's coming from Utah. He's, you know, been ranked in the top 10 for so many years, and he is so engaging, and he just relates to the audience, and he delivers a beautiful message. And those hoop dancers have up to 30 hoops that they tell stories with, and so it's amazing, and I'm excited to have him come back, and he's spending 2 days with the fourth graders too.
Oh,
so
nice.
That's really, really cool. Yeah. The Jim Sawgrass, a historical interpreter, and the camp that he sets up, and the demonstrations that he does, food demonstrations as well. So it's like, he is amazing. Whether he's in front of 400 fourth graders or, you know, 75 attendees at the powwow, yeah, he just, you know, captivates his wow audience. He is really able to hold their attention. So he is fascinating. And of course, the dancers. Yes. If you've ever seen a grand entry, yes, they're coming in, their regalia, mm-hmm, that's the clothing that they wear. It's handcrafted and it's priceless because yes they've built it over years.
Absolutely.
And it's maybe, you know, fabric that's been passed down that could be, you know, 100 years old, and they're gorgeous,
yes,
and the drums. And so it's like, it's just a magical time.
Yeah, when it's, you come to, it's truly an immersive experience.
That's a great word. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. A chance to experience Native American culture. And so, yes, I mean, Indiana was the land of Indians. And mm-hmm so you truly see that. So, and that's what we're celebrating that whole weekend.
Absolutely. And of course, there's music, storytelling, family fun, art and craft market, Native foods, all kinds. And this is just from the poster. And like I said, the calendar is packed. The schedule of events is packed with things for everybody, the entire family. This is a family-friendly event. How many people are you expecting? How many do you normally see over the two-day event?
So, I mean, over 3,000 people.
Whoa.
So, I mean, around 55 counties that people come from. You know, we usually track about 17 states that people, you know, are driving from. So, I mean, it's a big event. And it's like, you were talking about the food. I have to tell you, I tasted some this weekend.
Ooh.
A new food vendor, and it's buffalo steak, and he smokes it, and I tasted it, and it was so good.
Really great.
And yeah, street corn, fresh corn that he's, you know, on the corn, you know, like on the Blackstone,
yes,
and with seasoning and everything. It was like, it was just delicious. I can't wait to that. And fry bread.
One of my favorite things on the planet.
Yes.
I hope no one can hear my stomach because it just went, hello. Ooh, it's awake now and it wants some fry bread.
Yes.
And so once again, Debbie, tell us the dates, where it is, and the hours.
Sure.
That people
sure
can experience this.
So the powwow, the Andersontown powwow, is September 7th and 8th. Remember, a little memory aid for you. It's always the first weekend after Labor Day. We're at Beulah Park, and that's in Alexandria. So it's where the Madison County 4-H Fairgrounds are.
Mm-hmm.
And the hours are, the gates open at 10:30, so all the programming then starts at 11, but
okay,
I know there's always a, you know, a small line of people that are eager to get in and be the first ones when the gates
yeah
open. So gates open 10:30 Saturday, we run till about 10 o'clock at night, and then Sunday gates open at 10:30, programming starts at 11, and the powwow closes at 4 on Sunday.
Okay. Is there anything else that you want people to know about the event? Maybe they haven't been there before. What would you tell them? What would you say they're going to experience their first time out?
I encourage, if it's your first time, mm-hmm, if you can come on Saturday, there's just so much more to enjoy.
Sure.
And you can do it in a much more relaxed fashion, where Sunday everything's compressed.
Mm-hmm.
And then make sure that when you come that you are able to see a grand entry, because those are beautiful. Those are beautiful. So encourage to be there. Grand entries are like 1 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday afternoon. And then there's an additional grand entry at 7 o'clock Saturday night.
Wonderful. Is there a website people can go to for more info, Debbie?
AndersonTownPowwow.org. And we also have, you know, a Facebook page. Yes. So our phone number is on there in case you have questions. Call that phone number and guess who answers the phones.
Probably the event's biggest fan, I'm guessing.
Yes. Yeah.
Debbie, thanks so much for coming in and sharing information about the event. Debbie Webb is one of the organizers of the Andersontown Powwow. The Andersontown Powwow is also an IPR underwriter.
For this week's episode of Pop of Culture, we have a very special edition of What Are You Working On? Today, we're speaking with award-winning and internationally renowned recording artist and performer Douglas Bluefeather. And Douglas will be performing at the Andersontown Powwow on September 7th and 8th. Welcome, Douglas.
Hello, and thank you for having me. Great to be here.
We're thrilled, and we're going to be hearing a little bit of your Native American flute music here in just a moment, but tell us a little bit about how you got started with your music, and tell us what inspires your flute playing.
Sure. I remember when I was 5 years old, my mother telling me that I had Native American blood, so I grew up always being connected to that. I grew up in inner city Akron, and I always had what I felt like a very spiritual connection growing up with the Native American culture. And I still remember that to this day when I was outside on a tricycle.
Oh, wow.
But then it was about 1996. I had a very spiritual awakening with two Native Americans that came through from New Mexico. And it was then that I was put on what we call the Native American spiritual path, the Red Road. And I've heard it said that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And they did. And I was attracted to the music of the Native American culture. I'd been a musician since I was 14, playing the drum set, and I played in rock bands, you know, when I was in junior high and high school and then in college. And then I was on the road with a rock band that played in 25 states. So I had a pretty extensive musical background. So I became interested in the music of the Native American culture. And what do you think of? You think of the drum, the singers, or you think of the Native American flute?
Yes, of course. I'll say that's quite a transition from touring as a rock musician to playing the flute.
Absolutely, yeah. Completely different turnaround. But I was in a small world-type music store over in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and they had a Native American flute. And the guy picked it up and he played it for me. And like so many people, when they hear it the first time, it just hit me right in the heart chakra. And I fell in love with it immediately. I bought it and I learned how to play it on my own just by listening to other artists at the time. And it came with a very little instruction booklet that showed some basic fingering patterns. And I just took off on it. And a year later, I had my first CD out.
And so the song we're listening to now is titled Lament for a Chief. Can you tell us about this piece?
It's from my latest CD, Blue Chill. Like I said, I've been playing since about 1997, 98. And in that time, I've released 23 CDs. Blue Chill is my most recent one. It's what I call melodic ballads and grooves to relax to. It does have, of course, a Native American flute as the featured instrument, with keyboards and actually bass guitar, a few tracks with acoustic guitar and the drum set, which is my original instrument. So it's a little more modern, contemporary, but very relaxing, soothing, what I call chill out music. Lament for a Chief is a tribute to my brother. I remember being told at a very early age that my Native American ancestry was Cherokee on my mother's side. And then around 2017, I was adopted into the Yankton Sioux Dakota tribe by a chief that I had been very good friends with. He was an excellent musician himself. His name was Chief Golden Light Eagle, and we became very good friends, and he adopted me into his family and into the tribe. So unfortunately, we lost him in 2021 from COVID. So it's a tribute to him, Lament for a Chief. He was a tribal chief and a Sundance chief for a long time.
Yeah, that's lovely. It's sad. It's sad, but it's a gorgeous tribute.
Thank you.
The piece we're listening to now is titled Timeless, and it has a bit of a different feel, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is a different style. Most Native American flute players are playing more contemporary things. That's embellishments with other instruments, which I like to do. It gives me more to work with. But on the opposite side of that, you've got just what we call more traditional solo style Native American flute, which is just the flute by itself without any other instrumentation. I've done 3 albums like that. And it's more what we say, playing from the heart. I would never play it exactly the same way twice.
What inspired this piece?
Just going back and doing another album that's just the flute by itself, because I always run into an audience that says, well, do you have anything that's just the flute by itself? I don't like all the other stuff that's going on in the background. Yeah. So I will say, yeah, this one right here, this is just solo flute.
Yeah, it's lovely. It does. I really appreciate what you said earlier, where it kind of just hits you in the heart when you hear it. And I think there's something, you know, the title of the piece is Timeless, but there is something very timeless about traditional music styles, especially when we hear them for the first time and we have that aesthetic response, right? That we're really in the presence of something beautiful and timeless. So you've had a wonderfully prolific career, Douglas. Obviously, so many CDs and different styles of exploration of Native American flute. What are you working on now? I know Blue Chill is your latest album, but do you have an idea of what your next project will be?
Yeah, I've already started that. As a matter of fact, in 2020, when everything came to a screeching halt, I had, you know, obviously more time on my hands. I actually started 3 CDs back then. So the first one that came out a couple of years ago was called Time for Healing. And then this one, Blue Chill, which I started in 2020, finally finished up last year. It came out this March. And the third one that I started is with flutes that are tuned slightly different. You know, the standard tuning for any modern instrument is what we call to 440 hertz. That's the standard orchestral tuning. Mm-hmm. Years ago, a lot of flute makers started to tune flutes in 432 hertz. And that has become very popular in healing music because the frequency is said to affect the brain in different way. So I've been working on that CD, and I'll have that out sometime next spring. And I, at this point, everything's kind of a working title, but I think I'm going to be calling it Frequencies.
Oh, that's lovely. And that's perfect. And I've actually, I myself am very interested in how sound affects, you know, the human brain and the human body. And that's a really, that's a great idea for a project, I think, particularly for this instrument.
Exactly. You know, regardless of the tuning, the Native American flute has always been a very spiritual healing instrument to me because of its ability to, like I said, to just touch people in the heart chakra.
Well, Douglas, thank you so much for sharing your work with us today and your lovely healing music that we've gotten to experience. I am really excited about the Andersontown Powwow. And for folks who can't make it out to the powwow, how do they get in touch with you?
My website, douglasbluefeather.com. And I'm looking forward to seeing everyone, seeing old friends, making new friends at the Andersontown Powwow, September 7th and 8th. I'll see you there.
Hey, Michelle.
Yes, Jen.
It's time to find out what's happening this weekend around East Central Indiana.
I love this part. Grateful Fest is this weekend at Morrow's Meadows in Yorktown. The annual event includes a pet parade with a costume contest, the cutest pet contest, a kid zone, food and merchandise vendors, music, and more. Proceeds help homeless animals at the Grateful Rescue and Sanctuary.
September 6th is First Friday in downtown Anderson. Check out new exhibits, visit the shops and vendors, and enjoy live performances from 5 to 8 p.m.
The Fall Creek Heritage Fair is Friday and Saturday, September 6th and 7th at Pendleton's Falls Park. Enjoy arts, crafts, antiques, food, music, and family-friendly activities from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. both days. The Ultimate Elvis Concert will happen Friday, September 13th at Cornerstone Center for the Arts in Muncie. More info at cornerstonearts.org.
Do you have an event that Pop of Culture listeners should know about? Well, tell us at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Join us at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This week was produced by Luke Jones, who honestly looks a little like Stephanie Weekman this week, and was hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey.
And me, Jen Blackmer. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University.